are going to visit Janesville this hour. We are going to talk about how the closure of the General Motors plant in Janesville affected the community and its people. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. In 2008, in the midst of the Great Recession, the General Motors plant in Janesville closed, resulting in the loss of thousands of jobs. We will talk with our guest about what this meant for Janesville and its citizens and look to the future of the city and its economy. And we welcome your questions and we welcome your own experiences. I'd really like to know if the closure of the GM plant in Janesville affected you. How are you doing today? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. Very happy to have with us in studio Amy Goldstein, who has been a staff writer for the Washington Post for the past 30 years. She now focuses on healthcare policy. Her book is Janesville, An American Story. Good morning.
Good to be with you.
Thank you so much for being here. Well, I wanted to set the scene for today's conversation with a clip from Wisconsin Public Radio's newscast back in 2008. Let's take a listen to this announcement of the closing.
The announcement today that General Motors will close the Janesville plant and three others is an economic blow to the Wisconsin community that's long been entwined with automaking. The company has cut production in recent years as sales dwindled for the large SUVs built there, the Chevrolet Tahoe and Suburban and GMC Yukon. Cutbacks shrunk the workforce to about 2,600.
But I remember that. I remember that time. It was really, I don't know, it seemed shocking to me. Talk about what led to the closure.
Well, as you said, this was in the midst of the Great Recession, which was the worst economic time in this country since the 1930s. And General Motors was really struggling. This announcement that you just played was in June of 2008. And several months before that, General Motors announced revenue figures that were the worst financial losses the company had ever had in its whole history. So it was at a point when the company was trying to figure out how to keep going. And a year later, it would actually, if you recall, declare bankruptcy. So this was halfway in between. And as you say, this was a shock. There have been rumors for years in Janesville that their assembly plant, which was the oldest operating plant in the whole company, was maybe going to close. But those rumors never proved true. So when this actually happened, it was such a shock.
Yeah. How important was that GM plant to Janesville?
Well, I think it was important to Janesville in a couple ways. These were very good working class jobs. At the height in the 1970s, there were 7,100 people who worked at that plant. And it wasn't only the GM people themselves who were benefiting from that employment. The plant spawned lots of supplier companies nearby. So there were thousands of other people who had jobs that paid pretty well because General Motors was there. And then the rest of the economy was benefiting from the fact that there were working class people who were making good money and could buy things in the community. So there was a real ripple effect that the plant sustained Janesville. And when the plant went away, it really hurt Janesville.
Yeah, and this thing was, as you mentioned, the oldest plant in the nation at that time. And I mean, grandfathers, fathers, sons, for that matter, daughters as well, were working in this plant. This was the heart of the community.
Exactly. This plant had started turning out tractors in 1919, and it began making Chevrolets in 1923. So if you think about it, that's a lot of generation of workers. And when the assembly plant was hiring, it often meant that people inside the plant could hand a hiring opportunity to someone they knew, a son, a daughter, a friend. So it was a real community thing to be pulled into this plant.
Yeah. So thousands of people were affected by the closure. Maybe just give us a sense on how the community reacted when this news hit.
Well, I think that people reacted in different ways, but one of the things that really struck me was that at first there was a lot of disbelief, a lot of denial. The assembly plant had gained and lost products over the decades. And there was this widespread expectation that another product would come in, that this would be temporary, that it might not close. If it did close, it would reopen pretty quickly. There was a really assertive effort by the state of Wisconsin and people in Rock County and in Janesville to try to persuade General Motors to give this assembly plant a new little car that GM was going to start making. And that effort amassed the biggest amount of money that Wisconsin had ever offered a company to try to lure a business, in this case, to lure a new product to this old plant. And it didn't work. So there were, as I think of it, sort of two blows. There was the blow of the plant closing, and there was the blow of the plant not reopening.
Yeah, and of course, Congressman, now House Speaker Paul Ryan, who's from Janesville and represents that district in Congress, he was negotiating for years after the closure to try to bring something back there, right?
Yes, he and his staff were very much part of this rescue effort.
Mm-hmm.
My story begins with Paul Ryan getting a phone call as he's standing in his kitchen one night from the then head of General Motors, giving him a heads up that the announcement that the plant was closing was going to happen the next morning. So in a sense, he was involved from the very beginning.
Yeah. Well, in fact, here's Speaker Paul Ryan, a clip from a few years ago during the 2012 presidential campaign.
I come from a town that has been hit as hard as any. A lot of guys I grew up with worked at the GM plant in my hometown, and they lost their jobs when that plant was closed. But what happened next? Our town pulled together. Our churches and charities and friends and neighbors were there for one another. In textbooks, they call this civil society. I know it as Janesville, Wisconsin.
So, did the community pull together?
Well, I think that it did. Janesville, I learned, is a pretty resilient and resourceful place. It's got long, proud industrial roots, and it was not a place that was just going to take this lying down. So there were people who coalesced into a new business effort, an economic development effort, to try to bring new jobs to town, and they're still at it. There are, as Paul Ryan says in that clip, a lot of nonprofits in town. There's a food pantry called Echo. There's a free clinic called HealthNet. I mean, these are the kinds of local institutions that Paul Ryan was referring to. I spent a lot of time in these places, and what struck me, at least in the few years after the plant closed, was that these places were trying very hard, and there were lots of fundraisers going on, but the need in the community was so much greater than it ever had been. So there was a question of whether all this effort could still generate the capacity to help everybody who now needed help.
Yeah. So how would you say that the closing of the GM plant affected the town's spirit, or I should say the city's spirit, immediately?
Well, I don't think that it affected everybody the same way. There were kind of layers of effects. And there were different times at which the economic pain really hit home for different people. If you had worked at General Motors itself, you had something called subpay, which was union GM negotiated extra unemployment benefits. So those people had pretty close, not completely, but pretty close to their old income for a while. If you were at one of the suppliers when they laid you off, places like Lear, which made seats for the plant, there were about 800 people who lost their jobs at Lear, and those people didn't have as much buffer. So the pain kind of arrived at different times depending on where you sat in the community.
How did this affect Paul Ryan?
That's a good question. I interviewed Paul Ryan a few times as I was researching this book. And in a sense, it was very personal to him. I mean, as he alluded to in that that clip that you played, I mean, he had kids he'd gone to high school with who were losing their work, parents of people he had grown up with who had worked at the plant for years and were losing their work. So this was something that was very present to him. At the same time, Paul Ryan obviously has a pretty conservative political views. And he is, for instance, not somebody who supports the idea of federal money, of earmarks to help specific communities. So there are kind of limits because of his beliefs to what he was thinking was proper to do to help people back home.
So why did you decide to embed in Janesville?
Well, I had this idea that it might be useful to really take a close-up look at what happens to people and to community when work goes away. I thought that, you know, people around the country knew the unemployment numbers. They knew the political fighting going on in Washington over whether the government's economic policies to try to help the country out of the recession were good policies or bad policies. But I thought that was different than understanding what it really is like to lose work. So that's what I wanted to do. And I could have told the story in many places. Obviously, there were lots of communities that had different kinds of work that were going away during this big, mm-hmm. bad economic time. I was drawn to Janesville because, obviously, it lost a lot of jobs in a fairly small city. But beyond that, I was attracted to it because it had never been part of the Rust Belt. It's not that it was an affluent community, but it had always been a pretty stable community. And I liked the idea of looking at a place that could show me what this Great Recession had been doing to people, not an accumulation of economic decay.
Yeah. And I know you don't necessarily title the book, but why is this an American story?
Well, as I said, I think that people were losing job or losing faith in the continuation of their jobs all over the place. It was a time when there was a lot of insecurity. There was a lot of public voter anger, anxiety, which, you know, you can see very much persisted into this most recent election. So I had this idea that by looking very closely at one community, it might serve as a metaphor for the kinds of economic anxieties that were spreading around the country.
We are talking with Amy Goldstein. She is the author of Janesville, An American Story. We welcome your recollections of that time when the GM plant closed in Janesville. We welcome any personal stories that you have about how this closure affected you. How are you doing today if you once worked or knew someone who once worked at the GM plant in Janesville? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about Janesville and what happened when the General Motors plant in Janesville closed and what's happened since. We're looking at how this affected the community of Janesville and the many workers who lost their jobs. Our guest is Amy Goldstein. She is a staff writer for The Washington Post, and her first book is focused on Janesville. It's called, appropriately, Janesville, An American Story. We welcome your questions for her. We welcome your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. So, Amy, you decided in your story to follow some workers who had lost their jobs. Tell us just briefly who you decided to follow.
Well, what I wanted to do was show the different kinds of choices that people made when they lost their work. Or as I sometimes think about it, what choices people made when there are no more good choices left. So I follow three main families that had auto workers that all did different kinds of things. So one of them is a family in which the guy who had worked at GM went back to school thinking he was going to go into utility work. He went into Black Hawk Tech, Blackhawk Technical College, where lots of people went for retraining to study electric power distribution. But just before he was to have graduated, it started to seem that the jobs at the other end just might not be there. So he very reluctantly did something that many other people in town did, which was start to exercise his GM transfer rights. And he began commuting to an assembly plant that General Motors still had open in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And he is doing that commute to this day.
And he's called a GM gypsy then?
A GM gypsy. That's what these people call themselves. People whose, you know, significantly, I think, whose families have not wanted to leave town. I mean, there are a lot of people who are very rooted in Janesville. So some of these workers, including in this family, prefer to have a person commuting long, long distances, in his case every week, or the people working in Kansas or Texas who come home once a month. But it's a way that they can stay living in town.
Isn't that amazing? And the family life changes because of that.
The family life very much changes. Matt Wopat is the name of this person. And at the time I began to get to know his family, they had three teenage daughters. And their lives changed. One of his daughters didn't like to go out on weekends with her friends because she wanted to spend that precious time with her dad. His daughters would save TV shows. They would record TV shows so they could watch them together when their dad was home. So everybody in the family goes through a different kind of experience when somebody's working far away.
And give us a sense as to why people didn't just pick up the family and move to where the work was rather than, have the family stay in Janesville and have the worker commute.
Well, I know some families who did move. In most of the cases that I know of, they tried this commuting arrangement for a year or two and found that it was just too hard on family life, and they ultimately all packed up and moved to, you know, Kansas City or Michigan somewhere. But that's not how they started out.
Yeah.
In the cases of which people are still commuting, the families just feel that Janesville is their home. In a lot of these cases, the GM worker was within a few years of retirement. So they felt, well, we could sacrifice this for a while, but wouldn't give up the pension and life would all come together at the end. Yeah. In the case of the Wopats, he still has several years to go before he's eligible for a GM pension. He's already been commuting for 7 years.
And then I know that you also followed workers who decided to go to Black Hawk and get this retraining in another profession. Wasn't it electrical engineering or something?
Yeah, so, you know, in this country, the notion of what to do when jobs go away often is go back to school to learn to do something else. It's just a very popular idea. So almost 2,000 people in Janesville went to Black Hawk Tech in the couple of years after all this work went away. And people started to try to study to change their work in all kinds of ways. I mean, people went into nursing, people went into criminal justice work, or at least this was their aspiration. And some people did fine. One of the other families I focus on in my story, a couple, husband and wife, had both worked at the Lear Seating Factory. And the husband went into human resources management and managed to find work in that field. I mean, he considers himself very, very fortunate that he finished his training, which a lot of people didn't manage to do, and he found local work. Now, he started out making much less money than he'd been making at Lear. And he's been, you know, earning a little more and more money over time. But there was even a sacrifice there, even in that success story. He started working nights, which he did for several years, making less pay. His wife had studied criminal justice, and she also, I mean, this couple got very good grades. Like a lot of people who went back to school, they were absolutely terrified at the beginning, the idea that they were going to become students again.
Yeah,
but they did okay.
This was a married couple, and they both worked for GM-related companies.
Right, they worked for Lear, the seating manufacturer.
And so they were making pretty good money when this closure happened, and then they had to settle for less.
That's right. So, you know, the question of what is success, I thought was a very interesting question as I was getting to know people in town, because, as I said, many people who went to Black Hawk didn't finish what they were studying for a whole lot of reasons, either financial reasons or because they found that being a student, they weren't cut out to do that. But even people who did sometimes found that they just couldn't find a decent job in what they had been studying for. But this couple did. But even having succeeded in that way, for a while, their finances weren't anything like what they had been when they had those factory jobs.
Yeah. I know another worker you focused on was trying to get some retraining in some sort of, it was utility work, and he found that he didn't like climbing telephone poles.
Right. I mean, you're sort of face-to-face with the realities of what would this new work be. And that can be a very hard adjustment. And some people find that it's for them, and some people find, you know, this is just not what I want to be doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so from your experience and your reporting in Janesville with this with the attempt to retrain workers who lose their jobs in one industry to get a job in another industry, your assessment of that program for Janesville?
Well, on balance, retraining turned out, at least in Janesville, not to have been all that helpful. I took a look statistically with the help of a couple of labor economists at what happened to people who had gone back to school to retrain compared with people who also were unemployed in the same part of southern Wisconsin at the same time who didn't retrain. And the results were quite surprising. It turns out that people who did not go back to school were more likely a few years later to have been working steadily all four seasons of the year. The decrease in their pay from before the recession to a few years afterwards was less than the pay decrease of people who went back to school and found other work. So that's not that nobody benefited from retraining. And I should say that as a college, Black Hawk Tech tried very, very hard with these students. I mean, they set up all kinds of programs to try to make it easier for factory workers to turn themselves into students. But I think it's a hard situation when you don't always have enough jobs of the right kind or enough jobs at all on the other end.
So what's the lesson learned here then, especially when it comes to the retraining programs?
Well, I don't think this is an indictment of retraining programs broadly. But I think it does suggest that in a community that's still having a hard time pulling enough jobs into itself, that retraining alone can't solve everything.
Yeah. Didn't Janesville go through, maybe not quite as severely, but a similar situation with Parker Penn when it closed?
Yeah, so Parker Penn, as I said, Janesville has this long, proud industrial history. And part of it is General Motors and part of it is Parker Penn. Mr. Parker was a telegraphy instructor in town who, in the late 1880s, designed a better fountain pen and created a little company that pretty quickly became a very big company. And by the beginning of the 20th century, Parker pens were being sold to international markets. I mean, long before globalization became something that we know of, Parker pens were being sold in many countries of the world. But over time, the Parker family, which had kept the company for several generations, sold it off, and it was sold again, and it was sold again. And by the end, when the last of the kind of heirs to Parker Penn, not heirs in the family, but heirs in terms of the work being available, ended, what they were doing in Janesville was putting on labels of pens that were made elsewhere. Mm. And that ended early in 2010.
One of the touching stories in the book is, you tell it. It was the one of the schools in Janesville had a, I don't know what they call it, a Parker's closet, and it was to help the students who might be in need.
Yes, there are two high schools in Janesville, Parker and Craig, and a social studies teacher at Parker, a woman named, she's now married, her name now is Derry Eastman. She was Derry Whaler at the time I got to know her. She started to see that she had students who just weren't doing well economically. And she came up with this idea on her own to create what she called the Parker Closet. And it was a small locked room. At first, it just started out with Rubbermaid bins on the side of her classroom in which she collected donated food, used jeans, school supplies. And then she got her principal's permission to have a room that was locked with all this stuff in it. And it the beginning, it was not widely known. Teachers would sort of quietly tell her, you know, you might want to help this student, or you might want to help that student. It started out her first year with 12 high school kids who were getting supplies from the Parker Closet. Recent years, it's had about 200, and that stayed to this day.
Talking with Amy Goldstein, she is the author of Janesville, An American Story. And we are talking about what she learned when she went back to Janesville following the closing of the General Motors plant in Janesville. That was back in 2008, resulting in the loss of thousands of jobs. So talking about what it meant for Janesville and its citizens and the human cost of what happened. And we're welcoming your questions and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We do have some callers, so let's go to Eric, who is in the Beloit, Janesville area. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
Morning.
My comment or question, I guess, is part of the thing that made this situation so bad is the effect that there was so much of the economy of Janesville that was built around GM. It wasn't just GM. It was the companies that supplied it are all in this area. My father-in-law used to drive for a company called Jatco, which were the ones that delivered the vehicles, took them off the assembly line. And so even though they had been scaling down for years, generations of people had become reliant on having a good paying job in the city. And when that rug was pulled, it really, really hit hard. And I was hoping that your guest could comment on the situation in Kenosha, if she's familiar with it, where a similar sort of closure took place, but it wasn't quite so bad because the city had a more diverse manufacturing base. I'll just kind of leave it there because it's a comment that I've noticed. It was so bad.
Oh, thank you very much, Eric. Kenosha and the AMC plant closure did not hurt Kenosha as much as GM's closure hurt Janesville, Amy?
Well, I appreciate Eric's comments, and I entirely agree with them. And I'm familiar with Jatco. I know that people lost jobs there and for a lot of other companies that had jobs because the assembly plant had been there. You know, in I think it was the 1970s, the Janesville City Council had a consultant study looking at how best to protect the future of its economy. And the consultant came back with a recommendation that the city needed to diversify. And at the time, that seemed unimaginable. General Motors was near the heyday of its employment. It just seemed hard to imagine that that work wouldn't always be there. And I know that the Kenosha, the engine plant in Kenosha closed not that long after, I think a year or two after the assembly plant closed. And it was a big plant, but it wasn't as dominant. I agree with Eric's premise.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric, for the call. We have Jackie in Madison with us now. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had heard about this book coming out for a couple weeks now, and I've been really interested to read it. My family grew up in that area, and my dad was a welder for Lear, and he was about 58 or so by the time the company closed. And so, I mean, and I did have friends who worked at Lear who were younger and were able to take advantage of the educational aspect of, you know, like looking for new jobs and gaining another skill. But my dad was in that part of, you know, his life where, you know, he was, you know, he didn't want to go to school again. He already had done that, you know, decades before and had very sporadic employment after they closed because, you know, like the ageism was so, like, you know, was so effective on him. Like his wages were like $10 less an hour. And that was even when he was even given an opportunity to have employment because, you know, he was already, you know, almost 60. So that was, I mean, that was a really challenging time for him. And, like, his self-worth, you know, had decreased a lot because of, you know, he was so valued at Lear and that entity. And then going to sporadic employment where, you know, maybe he'd get a good wage, you know, maybe. I mean, it was a really troubling time for us.
Oh, I can imagine. What a blow. And I'm Jackie, is your dad now officially retired now?
Well, and he had to do the early retirement because mm-hmm. of the employment opportunities for him were so sporadic. I mean, even like the small amount of Social Security income that he can get right now from being retired early is better, I mean, than he was getting working in the field, and it's, you know, it's consistent.
Yeah. And how about you, Jackie? I mean, were you living at home at this time?
I wasn't living home at this time. My husband and I had helped them a lot financially mm-hmm. because of the sporadic income. I mean, and that's our family. We wanted to help out as much as possible. I mean, for me, it drove me to make sure that I got a good education and had stable income to where I ended up getting my master's because I didn't want to be in that dependency of factory work.
Thank you so much for sharing that. There's a real personal story about the human cost with her dad, you know, being a valued employee of this subsidiary or supplier of the GM plant. And then all of a sudden he's out on the street and he doesn't want to go back to school at near 60 years old.
So, Jackie, you make a couple of really important points. And I should say I'm really sorry that your dad went through this experience. I know it's a very hard thing to go through, and it's very hard for a family to deal with, as you say. So in terms of your dad's age, all across the country out of this bad economic time, this great recession, people who are 50 and older, and that certainly was the group that your dad was in, if he was 58 at the time, had the hardest time regaining work. And whether it was that people didn't want to retrain, they weren't comfortable retraining, companies didn't want to hire somebody who was that far along in their work life, there was a combination of reasons, but it's a real pattern that people who were between 50 and retirement age had a really hard time. The other thing that you say that I think is important is about what effect this had on your dad's self-worth. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I learned working on this book and getting to know a lot of people who were kind enough to let me into their lives in Janesville, is that losing work feels very personal. And even if you're losing work in a place at a time when thousands of people are losing work all around you, it still feels personal. Why did I lose the job? Why can't I get another job? If only I were better, if only I were more flexible. It's a very hard thing emotionally to contend with. So it's not just about money. It's about, as you said very wisely, it's about self-worth.
So, Amy, you will be back in Janesville when? On Monday? Saturday you're going to be back.
Saturday there. I'm going to be speaking at the Hedberg Public Library. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Amy Goldstein is the author of Janesville, An American Story. She will be at Mystery to Me on Monroe Street in Madison today, actually tonight at 7 p.m., She will also be a part of a book discussion in the Social Science Building at UW-Madison at 4 p.m. tomorrow. And then she will be at the Public Library in Janesville on Saturday, also in Milwaukee at the Boswell Books on Monday. So, boy, you're making the rounds.
Trying to get around.
And we are welcoming your questions for her about what happened in Janesville and what's happening now and how Janesville and its citizens have recovered or not from the closure of the GM plant. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about Janesville, talking about Janesville since the closure of the GM Motors plant. It's been more than 8 years now. How is Janesville doing? How are the workers doing who worked at GM or the related industries? And what is ahead? We are welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your experiences for Amy Goldstein, who is the author of Janesville, An American Story. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Lots of callers now, so let's go to Derek in Manitowoc. Hi, Derek.
Hi.
Hi, what's your story?
Well, I graduated from Janesville Parker in 1977. And back in those days, I would say that a large percentage of my classmates were just planning on going to work at the plant. Their fathers, their grandfathers had worked there. And because that was their plan, they didn't really even consider going to college or continuing their education beyond high school. And just the loss of those jobs, I think, was just devastating to people. It just threw their whole life plan out of whack, and they were not prepared to deal with that.
I'm glad you called, Derek. What did you have in mind when you graduated?
Well, see, I wasn't born in Janesville, and my parents expected me to go to college, and so I did. And if I had grown up in Janesville and my parents were both factory workers, I probably would have done the same thing.
And that is a part of the story, isn't it, Amy, that this was a place where you could at least, for many, go to work without going to college?
That's right. And this, I should say, was good work in terms of pay. By the time the assembly plant closed, General Motors was paying its UAW workers $28 an hour. And if you think about a couple both working at the plant, I mean, that supported a really nice lifestyle. And, Derek, your point, I completely agree with that the availability of this work, particularly in GM families where you could get in, you had an in to the plant, there wasn't a lot of incentive. So some of the workers who I focus on in my story who were a little bit younger than you, Derek, but the plant was obviously still going and it had that same attraction it had when you were in high school, Derek. They might have gone to a year or two of college, but they knew they didn't really have to find their way in higher education because these well-paid jobs were there for them.
Yeah. So is that a lesson learned, too, that the jobs that don't require a college education are no longer?
Well, another reason why I chose Janesville was because I was looking for a place to tell this story where the pattern of job losses matched what was happening in the national economy in the Great Recession. And there were a lot of jobs that disappeared during this recession time of late 2008 to mid-2009 that were just these kind of jobs. There were jobs that paid pretty well but didn't require a lot of higher education. So I had the sense that no one community is typical of every place, but that this story was representative of a lot of the kinds of work that went away.
The good union jobs that paid $28 an hour, was that ever blamed for the closure of the plant that workers were making so much money?
Well, that's a much broader debate than the focus of my story. You know, people have argued that General Motors and other automakers were paying too much in wages, in health benefits, in pension benefits. Other people disagree with that. I mean, that's a big, broad debate that continues to this day. Why did the auto industry stop doing so well? I mean, there are also issues about foreign competition. I mean, those are broad forces and broad choices that, you know, transcend the story that I'm trying to tell about what it feels like in a community to lose work. But one of the things that did strike me in Janesville is that it's not that nobody was angry that they had lost their work, but I didn't experience a huge amount of blame of General Motors. You know, people were traumatized that they lost work. But as I said, it felt personal to people. It didn't feel like they were a victim of some corporate decision. I mean, not that nobody felt that, but there were a lot of people who were less angry than I might have expected coming in from the outside.
Yeah. And I know that you don't necessarily get political with the book, but you do follow the after effects years after the closure, including the election of Governor Scott Walker and the Act 10 proposals. Talk a little bit about how Janesville was a part of the bigger narrative of changes going on in the state.
Well, these job losses happened just a couple of years before Scott Walker was elected governor. And your listeners know better than I do that He's been a very polarizing figure in Wisconsin. People really agree with him or really disagree with him. And in Janesville, Janesville and Rock County, where Janesville is the county seat, is a pretty Democratic place. It's got a long-time union, a UAW identity that lingers, even though a lot of the UAW jobs themselves have gone away. And it had also been a pretty cohesive place. It's not that there weren't conservatives or liberals in town and people who disagreed with each other, but it wasn't a place of widespread, bitter political polarization. And what I found was that during the time when Act 10 was so hotly debated and there were protests around the statehouse, that things got a little bit hotter politically in Janesville, that people were angry at school teachers, for instance, something that, you know, obviously Governor Walker was really, you know, he came in quick and cut back benefits for, cut back negotiating abilities for union workers, public union workers. And there were people in Janesville who began to resent the school teachers who still had their summers off and their pensions. So some of the kind of broader anger, the broader polarization that welled up in Wisconsin filtered down the interstate to Janesville.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org if you have a question for Amy Goldstein, author of Janesville, An American Story. Or maybe you have your own story to share about how the closing of the GM plant in Janesville affected you or your family. Helen in Little Chute is with us. Hello, Helen.
Hi, I wanted to share my experience. My father worked for the same company for 30 years, and this company had been in business for 100 years, and they closed. My parents had six children, myself included. And my father had to commute 100 miles one way to work because he was 61 when his company closed. He never complained. It was a traumatic experience for our family, but he never complained. He would go to work. He would take the bus to work, and he'd spend the week 5 days in various places and come home on the weekends. And he was absolutely amazing. And he was just a tremendous role model for me for the rest of my life. All six of their children are college graduates. And he said, you have to do what you have to do, and you keep on going, and you don't complain.
Aww.
So that was my experience.
Was it a paper mill by any chance, Helen?
No, it was a copper mine.
Oh.
And it was the Calumet and Hecla copper mine, and they were the primary employer. Now Calumet is a national park, but it did devastate the town. And so many people just kind of gave up. But my dad never gave up, and I was just so proud of him. And, you know, I just kind of took it for granted. He'd get on that bus Sunday evening, and then he'd come home Friday evening, and he never once complained about it. He just said, I have to support my family.
Well, a reaction, Amy?
Well, Helen, what your dad said about you have to do what you have to do to keep things going sounds very familiar to me from some of the people I've gotten to know in Janesville. You know, as we were talking about a moment ago, there's this group of people who call themselves GM gypsies who are working far away. And it's not that they enjoy that. It's not that they like being separated by their from their families during the week, or sometimes it's longer spells before they can come home. But they have a sense that this is how to keep the income going in their family. And it's, as your dad says, it's doing what you have to do.
Ryan emails, Janesville is not out of the woods yet, but things have been getting better every day. The problems Janesville has now are the same problems every small Midwestern town has, including prescription opioid abuse, drunk driving, etc. These are issues that have little to do with GM leaving. Janesville is starting to thrive, he goes on. If you can find a home to buy, it will be a lot of house for the money. We are close to Madison and Rockford, and businesses are coming to town. I'm not leaving, and my family is not leaving. So is Ryan got it right there? Is Janesville starting to thrive?
Well, you can hear different opinions about that. I think pretty much the widespread view is that the economy is starting to do somewhat better. For instance, there's a Dollar General distribution plant that's coming into town, bringing a few hundred jobs. That's very good news. And the city and the county's economic development apparatus is still hard at work trying to attract more businesses. There's a startup called Shine Medical that is based on the invention of a new way of making a widely needed medical isotope that has said that it's going to start production in Janesville. I think the questions are, what are the pay and how many of these jobs are there? If you look at the overall unemployment rate in Rock County, it's come way down. The unemployment rate had shot up to over 13% in early 2009, a few months after all these auto working jobs went away. It's now just below 5%. I mean, that's a huge decrease. But if you ask the question, what are people being paid? I mean, that's a different answer. These Dollar General jobs are going to be paying, as far as I know, about $15, $16 an hour. That's a lot less than $28 an hour GM wages.
Let's go to Lou in Oconomowoc is, I think, going to be our last caller. Hi, Lou.
Hi there. I was just going to kind of relate the stories. I'm hearing them, and I was just at McDonald's this morning, and I my mind's racing here, but I see a lot of guys my age. I'm 64. I was in the trades for 35 years, after I was a tool and die maker, did a 5-year apprenticeship, 10,600 hours. You know, I mean, it was very intense, and there was a lot of pride. And when I first started as a young man, we were sold on the fact, you get in with a good company, you work hard, you show a good work ethic, and it's all good. You know, we take care of you. You take care of us. Well, somewhere along the line, for our generation or for my age group, I think I see more and more the rules changed. And if you weren't smart enough to see it coming, and I saw it coming, but you're always kind of putting it off. Maybe I can get a little further down the line. But they started offshoring stuff, manufacturing one elsewhere. And a lot of guys like me eventually just ended up on the street or I tried to retrain on a couple areas. Computer networking stuff. No sooner than I get done with that, got an associate degree in that, then I see that getting offshore.
Oh, Lou, and I'm thank you for calling, and I'm sorry to jump in, but Amy, we have just a minute left. I don't know, the rules have changed?
Well, as Lou says, people long believe that if you have a good work ethic, you do good quality work, the company will take care of you. And that had been the expectation in Janesville for generations. I mean, the Janesville Assembly Plant was known within the company for producing good quality vehicles. And people thought that work would go on forever because it had gone on so long. So when it stopped, it was just a shock.
Yeah. We have just 30 seconds to go. Have you had reaction from Janesville since the publication of your book?
I have. I've been delighted to hear from some of the people who are in my story telling me, I mean, you can imagine I was happy to hear this, that they thought that I told their story accurately.
Yeah. And you may see them on Saturday?
I'm going to see some of them on Saturday.
All right. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Amy Goldstein is the author of Janesville, An American Story. Thanks to Brianne Chasso for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.